everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of the Lone Coat Mafia Podcast. It is once again me, the Reverend Godfather, your show's main host and frontman. And with me today, I have a special guest in studio, which is, oddly enough, the Daily Grind. I haven't been here in seems like 2 months. But still, I have with me Bernie, a.k.a. Burn, who...
Burn the artist, Burn the comedian. I got a lot of handles, man, but all of them sound very aggressive. And I don't mean to be. It's just what happens.
Well, the reason why I have Bernie here is because, one, we're kind of separating from what he does as his 9-to-5 to what he, his hobby, his geekdom, his fandom, so forth and so on. But he's the... When you see us at shows and you visit our Facebook page, facebook.com/ The Lone Coat Mafia Podcast, plug, like and stalk us there. But when you visit our page and you look at our cover photo, he designed that banner. So,
yeah, and I got to incorporate the cool little eye guy that you had tried to go with a... maybe a little more hip-hop than you actually are. But that's fine, man. That's what everybody
and,
wants,
that's
right?
What it is. And amongst being, you know, an artist and a geek, you said you were once like a professional wrestler.
Yeah, for 10 years in this particular area along the Mid-Atlantic. If anybody wants to go back and see some of my matches, I wrestled actively from 2000 to 2010. Around 2008, my bump card, that's a term that we use in wrestling, was filling up. And what that means is even though people call wrestling various derogative words for me, like, don't come up to me and say it's fake, I will hit you. And I will get arrested. I have the misdemeanors to prove it. So, but, yeah, you can only fall so many times until your bones start telling you no. And that was about my time. There are guys who can go much longer. Like Ric Flair had, what, 30, 40-year career?
Yeah.
Mine was much less. I was just... if you go on YouTube and search Henry Hump, I was the hardcore hillbilly. I wrestled in overalls when I was already a good 250, 260 pounds. Those damn things weighed about 30 pounds. So you see me moving with about 300 pounds on me. And, you know, I was proud of my work. I got a WWE tryout, actually. It was kind of fun. They didn't want me because I'm 5'8". You know, that was the time when they were hiring, like, Randy Orton, 6'2 and above guys, you know. And that's the aesthetic they wanted. And, you know, in pro wrestling, pro wrestling's an aesthetic business. You know, you want the moves to look cool. You want moves to look realistic. You want the people to look good.
We'll be talking a little bit of wrestling and kind of pulling back the curtain as much as we can. I think that's what a lot of fans have... Oh, the WWE. Mm-hmm. The leader.
WWE is the mainstay.
Is that a lot of rumors that come out is that that's what Vince McMahon wants. It's kind of like the
It's hard to
John Cena type physique.
And that changes. I mean, like right now, if you look, if I had started in 2010, I would be much more proud of where I'm at now because, you know, after me came your Kevin Owens. You know, a lot smaller guys like Sami Zayn and everything CM Punk and Daniel Bryan did to change all that. You know, they have changed it. About the time that was changing, though, I was winding down. I had already had the... See, in 2000, we had ECW and WCW closed, and where I got work and where I made money wrestling was doing the hardcore stuff that the WWE wasn't doing. You know, they went hardcore, safe PG. And, you know, I was wrestling... Remember Cookies Bar? Just a couple of streets
over? I think so.
We used to run shows there, and, I mean, I have scars on the back of my head, on the front of my head, where I bled, you know. Like, we did the hardcore tables, barbed wire. To make extra money on the side, I would let people staple $20 bills into me, you know. Just prove that you're tougher than just the average guy coming to watch the show.
You have a lot of this. What... I'm not saying wrestling is fake.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people who I know who have been in the business know that in some instances, like the WWE, it has been come out that it's more I'm not saying the fights are scripted, but the end storyline might be.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's ultimately what wrestling is and what wrestling should be known as. I know a lot of people still want it to be known as a sport, but I always took it as a storytelling medium. You know,
for guys mostly.
For anybody, I think honestly, like, I don't know. I'm a fan. I worked in the business, so it's hard. I'm clearly biased, but I think if you got like $15 and a free Friday night, I'd rather be at a live wrestling show than like watching a movie, because you can watch a movie once and you know what's going to happen over and over again. But wrestling is different every single time. You know, good wrestling is different every single time. Some people, you know, do it poorly.
Now, the thing is, I'm sure your ear is closer to the wrestling circuit than mine is, because I'm one of those people that goes through kind of a cycle. I might be heavy into WWE, then back away. And,
I think that's normal in wrestling, yeah.
But this past year, 2 years, I've kind of... my ear's been close to the ground a little bit. I've been kind of following it, But since, I think, this past January, we've had a lot of news come out. I try to go to some of the websites doing the show. When I see big news, like we had Paige leave then come back.
Exactly, you have a lot of mainstream news out of wrestling.
But the thing is, the one site I keep seeing news pop up, it's their site sucks. Because I'm not saying all wrestling sites suck, but the reason why I say their site sucks is because they have like 15 different videos going on, plus the...
Is it nodq.com?
It might be, because it's like they have two videos going on. Each one's playing a different news video, and you're there like, oh man, Paige is, this door, or this person left, and it's like, all I want to do is read the article and get the news, or news.
I think the best fan website that kind of gets, like, you get inside, but not too inside to ruin it, because I think a part of the thing, like, part of the fun of wrestling, like part of the fun of comic books, part of the fun of playing Dungeons and Dragons, which you know I do.
Yeah,
actively.
We'll probably get into that in a little bit. We've got time.
Is the suspension of belief sort of thing. And there's a... I mean, I hate to plug websites without them paying you, but I mean...
Go ahead.
PW Insider has been around since, like... They used to be a paper magazine, and now they're a website. And everybody there who works for them, they give you the best real news, but they also don't treat the fan as if they're stupid. Like, they won't give you the fake news. Like, if in wrestling, sometimes a knee gets blown out when it's not really been blown out. You know, it's just part of the angle that the pro wrestler's hurt and he needs a break. Sometimes he may go on like vacation or come back surprisingly the next week. He's been faking it or whatever. They'll report real injuries versus fake injuries, so people don't worry about it either.
You know? I remember, now this shows me how far back, at least my fan base goes back way better, farther than that.
Oh, you probably were Superstars era with me, right?
But this is in the 90s. I kind of stepped away from it, but late 90s, early part of the century.
Dude, how could you get away from it from 98, 99? It was the biggest thing going.
At that time, I was WCW. I was hardcore WWF in the 80s. But in the late 90s, when I first started working, and at that time, Hogan was coming back.
Oh, yeah, you had the NWO, the Goldberg explosion.
And that's when the whole aspect was WCW, the whole eyes were, and I was hardcore WCW. And that aspect, and I was becoming a fan of Diamond Dallas Page.
Oh, DDP,
DDP. And yes, I subscribed to his email list at that time. And he said, I cut my hand on a live post, got too close. And next week on, I think it was Nitro,
Sure.
And they said, oh, he cut his hand, you know. I'm like, wait a minute, that's not what he told his fans.
Yeah.
That was the early days of the internet, early days of...
Well, I think now, kind of like what you're talking about the last 2 years, it's becoming more important, is I think wrestling, the wrestlers and promoters and those guys have learned how to use the internet better for that. Like, they're able to use the smart mark venues to push storylines. Like, right now, I liked how they had Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn got kicked off the bus in Europe. You might have heard about it. No, they're two wrestlers who just recently turned heel, and this is going along. Like, WWE lately has had a lot of releases and people leaving, people actually coming out of $1 million contracts to go independent because they'd rather have more freedom and whatnot. And what I like about that angle is they're using that momentum that's been created over like the last year, all that controversy, to put it into a story. And I think that's brilliant. I mean, wrestling, like I said, I also wasn't a fan from about the time I quit. Like, honestly, WWE lost me about 2005, until about 2012. I wasn't a big fan of watching it weekly.
For the moment, before we continue, everybody out there who's not a wrestling fan, you're going to hear us use two main terms. One is babyface. Another one you heard Bernie say is heel. Babyface is usually the term used in wrestling and by fans as the good guy. And heel is usually the term used for the person that's the bad guy or the evil wrestler that everybody tends to hate. Sometimes there are people like Roman Reigns that push as a baby, but they're seen as a heel by fans. But it's confusing, but it's kind of fun too.
It is fun, and Roman Reigns is a great example. He's being pushed as a baby face, but used as a heel, and people who don't know what's going on call it well, they're confused, like the WWE's confused with what they're doing. But I mean, like, their arena attendance used to be like, they would max out at like 70% of a capacity, but like here in the last 6 months has been 90 or more. So, you know, people want to see
that
drama.
That's the thing that I've been hearing reference. Kind of go back in reference a lot of the more popular wrestlers that have been taking breaks and going the indie circuit. It's more so, from what I've heard in the past, is that they need that break. They need time to heal. Because the WWE schedule and how Vince tends to push a lot of the wrestlers, there's like no time to heal.
You work 24/7 if you work for Vince. Yeah.
So there's that aspect. But from what I've been hearing over the last couple of months with WWE, and they're not so much the house shows, but their arena shows, is that when you see on TV versus those who have actually went, when you watch on TV, they're saying, oh, we're at 94%, we're at 75%, or 80% on up. Yet the fans that come back say, no, it was like 50%.
Yeah.
And because...
Well, that sometimes those percentages can be finagled from either side, because like when you do arena renting, you know, like it becomes your property for that night or whatnot, you can decide that capacity is 70% is actually 70% is what we're paying for, so it's actually 100%, you know. Numbers in wrestling are always faked, because when I wrestled I was 5'10. I am not 5'10. I'm not 5'10 in boots. But 5'10 sounds better than 5'8 on a wrestling card.
That's the thing. You've had a lot of, as much as a lot of the wrestlers and people get hate, as much as I want to see, you know, curse out Vince, not so much Vince McMahon, but Triple H and...
there's real drama.
Like, how dare you, you know, recycle storyline. The atypical fan reaction, you know, but there are times you've seen, like, over the past, I don't know, 2 to 5 years when they had that little... I think they have that charity, and it's named after that little kid that died. You know who I'm talking about.
I do. Connor's Cure?
Yeah, Connor's Charity.
Yep.
You know, you see him, you know, that little clip that they showed on the WWE. You know, him just behind the scenes before that WrestleMania, and Triple H is like, go ahead, slap me in the face, go ahead. And he wants to, and he's like, and he turns to his dad like, can I? But he's like, go ahead, have some fun. But it's that perfect moment that Connor's trying to, you know, not geek out and really do it. But, you know, he turns that instinct of a son turning to his father like, can I really do this? But it, you know, it plays out.
Oh, yeah. I think that was part of the turning point for the WWE, too. And also, they're still transitioning. Like, if you noticed, they stopped doing pyro and all that. Like, you know, the company's going to change. It's a publicly traded company. They have to change from time to time. I heard that there's 40 riders for the WWE, and that's actually really abnormal. Normally, a riding team is, like, 5 guys and, like, 2 or 3 real wrestlers who know kind of, like, how storylines should play out for crowds. So, you know, they're experimenting, and it's been fun watching over the last 2 years, to be honest with you. Like, I'm looking forward to the pay-per-view this weekend just because they've not done a big Survivor Series, traditional Survivor. Like, you've seen Survivor Series back in, like, 88, 89, right? Like,
right.
They had, like... 5 or 6 matches where it was like 5-on-5 teams. Like, dude, that was logistically, like, it was crazy. Like, I miss those days. But now they're bringing it back, and I think it's kind of fun that the throwback stuff's coming in.
That's what I kind of missed when granted, times have changed. WWE's trying to go with the flow, go with the times with their app and watching it that way and watching online. What I miss is that recently I got my Sundays off again.
Nice.
And one of the things I've missed is, like, I know once a month is pay-per-view or WWE. And I was like, you know what? As much as I like having Sundays off now, son of a bitch, motherfucking WWE has to go to everything towards the app. I can't wander down to freaking Buffalo Wild Wings and catch, you know, up the pay-per-view.
And well, I mean, you know, it is West Virginia. I may be able to, like, share a password with you or something, you know, but, if you need to watch it.
I'll have Uncle Tony talk with you.
Yeah, exactly. there's always ways. Like, that's, I mean, I've had funny stories. Like, I hate to say it, but, like, when I was growing up as a kid, we used to watch all the wrestling pay-per-views.
Right.
My parents were fans, too. And I never understood. I didn't know we didn't pay for them. My family had the illegal cable box. So, like, I got to watch all kind of great wrestling, and I didn't know we were doing it illegally. You know, as a kid, I didn't know. I just knew that.
That was the best time. It's just like, I remember. Now, here's. Now I'm I don't know if I'm aging Bernie or not.
I am 36 years old.
I'm 42.
Oh, you really?
Yeah, 42.
Man, you don't look.
I'm going to age myself. I remember when. Earthquake came to be.
John Tinta, yeah.
And I brought his book.
Excellent.
It was many years ago. It was a great book.
Great book, yeah.
They kind of chose him to come out and kind of test, I think it was Hulk Hogan's, you know, push-up skill. And I remember that, you know, aspect, and, you know, writing a letter and getting yelled at by my mom saying, how dare you write a letter to the stupid wrestling personality instead of, you know, Mother's Day card. But that's beside the point. Come to find out, over 20 years later, I was talking to a pastor here in Inwood. He was in that audience.
Excellent.
And he was, we're not talking a skinny type of pastor. We're talking a pastor that's about, when you look at him, he's about both of us combined, so he's a big,
big buggy dude. Yeah,
and as you know, probably you'll confirm this. Sometimes there is a when they want to introduce a new wrestler, they'll put a plant in the audience.
Exactly,
and he was the plant, and not the pastor, the guy who was Earthquake. He was the plant.
Sure,
and like everybody, what he said, everybody was pointing at me because I was the pastor was like I was the big guy, but the spotlight turned to who became Earthquake.
Sure,
so. That was kind of funny.
I mean, he was a big dude, too.
Right.
Was that like Allentown or that general area where WWE was running? Or WWF at that time was running?
I don't know. I said, at that point, I was like maybe
I got like
10.
Yeah, pro wrestling historian in me. You know, that's how I interact with it now since I can't wrestle. You know, I like learning as much of the ins and outs of it as I can.
The thing is...
that's great, though.
Now that I have you here, again... this is kind of a little bit of a year in review with wrestling and all that. Because it's been one hell of a year.
It really is.
What do you think about the Hardy Boys coming back to the WWE?
I think that's a really complicated question.
They've had one, you know.
This goes in, like, we could probably do a whole show on, like, the whole TNA / Impact Wrestling / whatever they are now thing. I've not followed a lot of that because, like, I wasn't watching TNA just because I don't know how to say this. I've had friends who work at a high level in wrestling, and TNA either treats you really good or really poorly, and then they've treated enough of them poorly to where I was like, I'm not going to support the product. But then when the Hardy Boys were doing the Broken Hardy game, I couldn't help but watch. Matt Hardy and Jeff Hardy were just genius there, and you're right, like, the beginning of this year was when all that trouble was happening and they left, and then, like, Mania was when they made their debut, correct?
Something like that. It was like, at that point, like, it was almost that week, I think if my memory serves, it was like that week, it's like, okay, I'm recording that Monday or Tuesday,
yeah,
and it's going to be me and my co-host, and good chance my co-host, Big Candy, will be watching WrestleMania.
I remember the episode.
And he'll have news. And I remember watching, like, Facebook, you know, that Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
And all the news, like, we're watching, you know, coming out of the Hardy camp, hey, we're just watching it. We're
well, that up. Was the thing after they
left. And all of a sudden, that Sunday night, guess who shows up? The Hardy, Broken Hardy. I'm like, holy shit, this is going to be, you know, one hell of an episode when we record.
Well, that was the cool thing about all that, too, is because after TNA, they were still doing the Broken gimmick on the what's known as the Indies. And do you know about Maryland Championship Wrestling?
It's like... not really. I probably heard of...
Well, they're out of Baltimore, and they're real close by, and it's actually one of the bigger, like, non-televised... Well, they do actually do have TV, but, like, short of WWE, TNA, and, like, Ring of Honor, they're actually a really big company, and, like, Jeff and Matt were wrestling there, like, the night before Mania, and so, like, the rumors of them joining WWE at that point, it was so, like, plausible, but also implausible at the same time. So, like, man, I love that kind of drama. That was a great Mania moment, actually. And since then, I know Jeff is hurt now, but Matt's been just severely entertaining. He's just so good at what he does.
And that's what I've been hearing. I've been hearing from some fans that, friends that are mm-hmm. fans, like, dude, I know you backed away. You got to come back to WWE.
And he's been losing matches a lot, but, you know, he's in a position where he's the older guy. And, like, he's also Matt Hardy. And losing in wrestling is kind of like, doesn't really matter. Everybody knows it's fake. So, like, what's a win-loss record when somebody else is deciding it for you? But he's been putting guys over and being that mentor, too. Like, like him and Jeff coming back and just speaking with the younger guys, you can see that it's made them better. So that's a cool influence. I'm glad the Hardy Boys are there.
I can't put them at that level, but do you kind of see them right now almost being at that Undertaker level of mentor? Because the Undertaker was that kind of, you know.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Kind of that, you can, I've heard stories from like Big Show when he was starting out in the WWE mm-hmm. saying, when he started out, granted, he was first in WCW, then yeah. WWE. He said when he came over, the Undertaker was like, "Dude, you can't do that. You know, let me help yeah. you out."
That's exactly right. That's kind of how it goes. And then what's interesting is like Matt and Jeff Hardy were kind of like, well, Edge and Christian even, and like the Dudley Boys. They were like, they were the prototype to what a lot of the wrestlers now are, like CM Punk and Daniel Bryan. Like, they were starting in that super athletic, super high risk taking, super entertaining, just stupid entertaining, because, like, I've fallen off of a 15-foot ladder before. You can't fake it. It hurts for real and for a long time. And the fact that Jeff Hardy's done that
countless times,
every weekend for like 25 years, and he just now is, like, this is his first absentee from injury ever. This summer, so, you know, the man's inhuman. So, yeah, I think a lot of the wrestlers, like, especially the younger guys who want to be the... How I learned in Kentucky is where I actually learned that. The old-timers there wasn't anything known as rest holds. Like, we wrestled, we grappled, went to a hold, did a spot, did a hold, did a spot. And now it's like, now they do rest holds. Holds are only, like, catch your breath in between just... Insane spot, crazy jumps, crazy dives. Like, even watching some of the guys through their, like, kick routines, like Samoa Joe, as big as he is, like, if I did the three kicks and then the back hands and the spinning thing, I'd be out of breath by the time I was done with it. So, like, having Matt and Jeff there to help put together, like, to have a veteran view plus the new wrestling view, I think it's been – I do think it's, like, almost Undertaker level. Like, those guys were there at the beginning of the Attitude Era and helped usher it in, you know, so.
Define things and
– oh, yeah.
And still, I'm sure if you mentioned someone like the Undertaker or mm-hmm. whomever his real name is
– Mark Callis. I'm terrible about that.
But I'm sure he's still very – despite his age and how long he's been with the company and what he's done, he's still – one, intimidating, and his name probably does.
Well, he's have the kind of guy. Undertaker goes down to the NXT thing. I know Shawn Michaels has been down there for like the last year, helping guys be better. You know, there just are those guys. Like, they're in the WWE and the like the big leagues for a reason. You know, like, those guys are going to be the immortal names. You know,
right.
Carlito, maybe not, but I like Carlito.
I know we spent. Talked about it briefly, but what do you think about a lot of the dismissals that WWE has been having lately?
It happens.
I know
I mean, I don't see it as a negative sign. The WWE actually used to release people a lot more often. If you, like, from about the end of WCW then, they used to keep a leaner roster. For, like, the last 5 years, they had a much larger roster than, like, I mean, I know Vince McMahon's worth billions of dollars and whatnot, but, I mean, it's still a company.
I think the reason why we might, one of the reasons now that I think of it, that we hear more of it more often is to, as we've said on the show, we're in a 24/7 news society.
Exactly.
And therefore, a lot of the news is almost instantly out there. So
yeah. And it sucks to see people lose their jobs and stuff, but like, I'd rather see people released nowadays than like to 2008, just because like, they can make good money in Ring of Honor. They can go to New Japan. There's probably, I know you said you're a very casual wrestling fan, but you've probably heard of Kenny Omega.
Rings a bell.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, anybody else out there who just follows wrestling, like, he's probably the biggest guy to never be in the WWE right now, and he's making a ton of money. so like, guys, like Cody Rhodes, he's a big guy who got released, and now he's made himself a hell of a career. He's a Ring of Honor world champion. He's not Stardust, which was a stupid gimmick. And
when I saw that, it's like, Why is WWE doing this shit? You know, it's,
well, to hear him talk about it, he actually enjoyed the idea of working with his brother as intimately as that was, but he wasn't, any of his ideas weren't being used, so he got disgruntled about it, you know. And I mean, he's Cody Rhodes. He comes from a true legacy of wrestling. Right. Like, if he felt like going to the indies and doing what he wanted to do himself would work, and it did. In the last 2 years, he's increased his value. Like, he's, so in the WWE, he was opening matches, he was doing stupid gimmicks like Stardust and wearing the mustache and stuff, opening pay-per-views, and now he's headlining pay-per-views. You know, they might not be WWE pay-per-views, but, you know, he made a good decision. You don't have to be in a WWE to be a billionaire at it, I guess.
Right.
And so nowadays, when people get released, I don't feel so bad for them. Like, they have avenues. If that's what they want to do, they can. And, I mean, Hollywood's picking up wrestlers left and right now, too. So, I mean, Dave Bautista having a career after wrestling amazes me.
And that's the thing. I think, from what I'm speaking of Dave Bautista, is that when he finally started to make it big in Hollywood, especially with Guardians of the Galaxy,
fantastic.
He's like, listen, I have to learn to act. You know? And, like, all right, good for you. Good for you.
Yeah. And he's done a good job. I enjoy him as Drax. And I don't know if he could do any other role, but why would he?
Right. It seems to fit him. He's done a lot of other roles, but I'm the type of person that is like, hey, if you're a wrestler or singer or anything like that, you want to try out acting if it's right for you, go for the shitty roles. Go for the you know, that way, if it's a shitty movie and you suck, you're not really, you know.
All right. We don't have to pick on Dwayne The Rock Johnson. For Doom and the Tooth Fairy that much. Those movies are terrible, but he now makes more money than anyone on Earth.
Right.
So that's okay. I guess anything, like, in the creative field. I mean, like, I am a working artist, and, like, I know I'm a graphic designer now, and I have a 9-to-5 version of that, but, like, if you're going to be in a creative art, man, nobody else puts any value to it. Actor, wrestler, or anything like that. So you got to make it, you're the one that has to make it worth $1 million, you know? So, like, everybody working, they're working hard.
I know that, I'm sure there's a lot of wrestlers. I'm not going to have you name names or anything like that. We both know that there is, I'm sure the WWE has gotten a little bit more flexible with the role, but I'm sure you heard it in reference to that. If you're in the WWE, your heel, that's what you have to be out and about. But if you're babyface,
I'd say that's actually super relaxed now, because, like, you'll see, what the Godfather is politely referring to is something known as kayfabe, and a lot of people, I know in the podcast world, if you listen to Jim Cornette, who I do, I love Jim Cornette, he's my favorite old school guy. So people don't protect the business like they used to, but then, like, even I'm here, like, I'm kind of in the middle. Like, there are things that I won't talk about how wrestling works, but there are things that, you know, the cat's out of the bag. Like, people should know that it is a legitimate form of entertainment. Like, sure, it's like, I don't know, a lot of people don't want it to be, like, you know where wrestling started from, right? Like, wrestling used to be part of a sideshow act, like when carnivals, and they would have guys who learned how to grapple in Europe and, like, learned how to really fight, and that would be the guy, like, hey, try to pin this guy, pay a nickel, pin this guy, we'll give you $100, you know, like, you could become rich quick. And the guys were, like, legitimate shooters, and they could tie an average farmhand, you know, into a million little pretzels.
But the whole aspect of what we're brought, the topic I brought up is kind of well-known anyway.
So it's kind of...
That cat's been out of the bag for at least a while.
It kind of is, but...
At least amongst fans.
But fans, like, there's still things that, like... Like, one of the things I hate that fans do that I feel like they would have more fun if they didn't worry about it was, like, John Cena should have won, or John Cena should have lost. Either of those opinions, like, why should he?
you're going to have the diehard fans no matter what.
Yeah. Well, I think that, like, oh, man, I wished he would have won, or, oh, man, I wished he would have lost. You know, like, having a little more of a, I don't know, I think people treat wrestling, I think it should be treated more as, like, a play. You know, like, nobody goes in into, like, Les Mis and go, like, oh, Jean Valjean should have won, you know? Like... I don't know.
That's why I kind of agree with that. It's like, I understand where some fans say, hey, someone like Daniel Bryan should have had more of a push, or...
Exactly.
You know, that's a better phrasing, or I think...
Well, push is even, like, a lot of people use it...
I think they might use it wrong, but...
Yeah, a lot of people don't understand what a push means. Like, one of the things about a push is like, I had a push... But in my career, like as Henry Hump particularly, I only won 3 matches in 5 years as Henry Hump. I came out there to make the other guy look good and everything. But the cool thing about having an actual push in pro wrestling is I was the job guy. I was the one losing. But it was my job to get the crowd hyped. And as long as the crowd got hyped, I got to keep my role as – I got to pick who I wrestled and how the match went. You know, like, it wasn't a seniority thing or anything. It's just, like, the company knew that I would tell a good story. That's what a push actually kind of is. So, like, when somebody has a push in wrestling, if you hear that term, like, on one of the news websites or whatnot, that just means that guy or girl is having more say of what's going to happen. And that's a really important thing. It's a very prestigious thing, because when you got 40 riders riding for you, if you get to break that mold a little bit and get an actual push, like Daniel Bryan right now as the general manager, there's a YouTube clip of like all the things he's been saying with his push for like the last year, and he's been completely off script and like kind of jabbing at the WWE as like a fan would. And it's been hilarious. Like, he's been saying stuff that would get most anybody else fired. I'll link you to it. It's really funny. It's great. So, yeah, I mean, that's the thing about wrestling, though, is, like, I think fans just need to learn to be fans again. Just let it go. You know, you don't need to know. Like, why even worry about it? Watch the guy do the dive. Watch the guy bleed. All the women wrestling right now has been just, like, they're as good, legitimate, technical wrestlers as any of the guys ever were. And so that's great.
I think the latest wrestling video I watched was 10 times. It was like one of these top 10 lists. I know that a lot of them were cheesy and stupid anyway. But top 10 times that Triple H has broken character. just like, I'm on lunch. I'm like, what do I watch? I don't want to watch that. I don't want to watch that. That's 40 minutes. I only got about a half hour, you know.
Sure.
And I'm like, oh, the top 10 list of, you know, of Triple H, and one of which is that he was doing his, in essence, personality or over, you know,
times 10 personality
at ringside, being the kind of the boss of, you know.
Well, he is.
But he was kind of over personality. Sure. And I think John Cena was in the ring. And he made a kid behind him cry. And he had to turn around like, oh, kind of just like, it's...
Dude, that happens too. It's real funny. That's pretty great. I need to watch that. I think I remember when it happened, to be honest with you. Was that at a pay-per-view?
I might have been. I don't know.
I don't know.
It's just,
I've been hitting the head a lot.
But it was just, it's nice to see sometimes that happen, you know, just kind of the wrestlers be them, kind of break character a little bit. But I love watching, when I used to watch WWE, like Raw and all that, I loved watching the crowd more so than watching the wrestling. Because it,
dude, that's half the reason to go to a live wrestling show. Anybody in the area that can hear my voice, go to Summit Wrestling Association shows in Greencastle, Pennsylvania. The crowd there is sometimes small, sometimes large. Always animated. That was my favorite crowd to work in because most of the people were dressed like Henry Hump. Like, they came out in the overalls and the hats, and God bless them, they think it's real, and I love them for it. They would get so torn up every time I lost, and I lost in front of them probably 200 times. So it's great.
What I'm saying is, mm-hmm. it's not just that. Seeing, yeah. you know, people come in dressed as, you know, their favorite wrestler.
Sure.
It's just that I'll eyeball the crowd just to, you know, see the reaction to what's going on. And especially when you see the wrestlers come in from the holding area, whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. backstage. And I remember one Raw, I'm like, just eyeing the crowd. I forgot who was coming down. I'm like, is that dude there in a tux?
Oh,
yeah. And it's like, he's there in a tux. And, you know, I have the ability to rewind. And it's like, sure. rewind and replay. And his date's there in a prom dress. Holy shit.
Well, that's like, I noticed... we'll change topics a little bit because we really don't want to talk about D&D. But, like, wrestling kind of started the convention thing. Like, one of the first things ever was, like, going to conventions to meet wrestlers and actually have, like, autographs and, like, get behind the scenes with them and everything. And I think what I like about nerddom and geekdom overall is, like, dude, like, there's every WWE show you go to, somebody is cosplaying as Macho Man. Like, there's always somebody dressed up as Macho Man, Randy Savage, and I love it. Like, it's fantastic. I like seeing seeing people do the costuming and stuff like that.
One of the oddest experiences I had, I'm not knocking the wrestler at all.
Sure.
honestly, he's not going to listen to this anyway.
I'll link him to it.
This was way back in the early, I want to say 2003, maybe 2004. Uh-huh. I got a chance to meet Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Of course.
And he was, waiting in line, he was the nicest guy there, shaking hands, doing photos. But when it came to my buddy, me, and my buddy behind me, somehow his handlers didn't want to take any more photos.
Okay.
And they, not him, the handlers.
Isn't that a convention thing? Like, I've had that happen a few times.
Yeah, it was just like, I was like, all right, you don't want to take a photo? I'll have my buddy, this is the day when we actually had film and camera.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, fine, I'll have my buddy, and I'm handing my my camera back to my buddy. I'll have my buddy take the camera. You don't want to take a photo? I'll have my buddy take a photo. And he was like, no photos, period. And after my buddy went, that was behind me, he had a few words with the handlers about taking photos. This was before
Steve Austin.
Of celebrities were charging for photos.
Sure, sure.
And you could have a free photo.
So, like, Steve Austin was like, God damn it, they could have took a photo with me.
Because it was like the people in front of us were having photos taken, but the people, me, my buddy in front and buddy back, were didn't no photos. Then photo like that. You know, I'm not knocking Steve Austin. It's just
I wasn't big in the conventions until really recently. I went to HasCon, Hasbro's very own like kind of self indulgent convention this year, their first one, and I did not know that there was such a thing as like First Con Blues. Otherwise, I would have waited a couple of years. But it was a terrible experience. There was a lot of people. Nobody had anything organized. And, I mean, you know, handlers and stuff like that. I guess everybody always has the best intention, though. Like, oh, we're going to help Steve out and just, like, get him out of here on time or whatnot. Right. But, like...
I know Demolition was at...
Demolition's at all.
I'm not... I didn't meet them personally. Mm-hmm. I think it was... One of them was wandering around. This was at Matt's show this past September.
Uh-huh.
And they were there. And
oh, cool.
One of them was wandering around just, you know, taking in all the booths and saying hi to everybody. Laid back type. Both of them looked very laid back and cool.
Yeah.
They were there in the classic face paint. And
mm-hmm.
Not the whole 80s, you know.
No, well, they're both older men now. I like that they go to conventions and stuff now. And a lot of people don't know it, but Darso, I don't remember which one he is. Barry Darso. I don't know if he was Axe or Smash. But he was one of the main bookers for the WWE for a long time, like one of the head writers. So I'd love to catch him at a convention, just pick his brain on some of that.
The thing is, me talking to you about wrestling is different than actually talking to a big name.
Oh, of course.
It's kind
of
hard to... I tried it once. It didn't work out well. But
well, if you don't know how to, yeah, I mean, you know, there was
depends a, on the wrestler.
It does. You know,
so that me go up to like Demolition, start asking questions like, okay, sure. I'm not that big of a fan to.
Well, you don't know how to speak carny and all that fun stuff. Like there is a legitimate language that wrestlers have with other wrestlers that only wrestlers really know. Like some people think they know, but like it's like one of my favorite things to do is go to a wrestling show, use what I know to get in for free, just because you know I've wrestled, I've carried in rings, I've set up, I've set up lots and everything. So that's always fun. But I guess it is different. But I mean like. You probably don't care about how old-time bookers used to split the pay between the guys and the ring crew and all that fun stuff. That's the stuff I like to know about, like the real hardcore logistics of it right. all. Because it just seems like unbelievable. Like every wrestling show that gets put together, you think like, who the hell thought of this? Like, who put a big square in the middle of a room and raised it up high enough and put ropes on it and said, hey, we're going to pretend to now hurt each other here. It just blows my mind.
That whole aspect of, okay, this is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
Now, what we're going to do is we're going to put the square thing. Don't worry. It's going to be padded. Now, we're going to put these real, not little ropes. These suckers are going to be about 4 inches in diameter.
Steel cable.
Mm-hmm. Steel cable.
It is steel cable. If you hit a rope, like I was able to charge. I think like most wrestlers can like sprint. Like when you only got like 20 feet, right? But, like, we're able to sprint, like, from 0 to, like, 20 miles an hour just on our leaps, you know, just, like, falling properly. And when you hit those ropes, man, like, every wrestler you meet, like, we're calloused at our ribs because you're hitting steel cable. It hurts real bad.
But that, they probably started out with actual ropes. So
probably. Some of my actual companies, WWE still uses traditional ropes. They're just a little dangerous. Part of the thing learning to wrestle is actually when you hit the ropes, you hold on to the rope just in case it breaks. Mm-hmm. You can, like, control the fall. But, yeah, like, reverse engineering wrestling is just one of the things I want to do before I die.
Like, how did this? We're going to put this ring up, bunch of ropes, steel cable. What? No, don't worry. So what are we going to be doing in this ring? Is it going to be like boxing? No. What we're going to do is we're going to be tossing people around. Have somebody toss you around. Wait, what?
Well, that's the thing. Like, you got to think. Like, a lot of people say running was the first sport. I call bullshit on that. Because if you and I were cavemen, and there was, like, the last piece of meat, you know, from our hunt, are we going to run around the fucking compound for it, or are we going to, like, wrestle each other for it? So wrestling is the oldest sport. I'll argue that until the day I die. But how it became... on a raised platform in the middle of a bunch of people smoking and drinking while people wear gimp masks and bleed all over the place. I don't know. I want to learn.
And how did it become popular, and who was the first person to actually say, all right, let's charge people for this?
Well, that was Lou Thesz and Vern Gagne, but, you know, like, there's a lot of old-timers who can fill in the blanks that I'd like
right.
to pick
right.
the brains of.
But to kind of move along, you kind of hinted. I'm not too... Like you said, we could probably talk wrestling all day.
Oh, I can.
To kind of mix things up, you said you tend to do Dungeons and Dragons.
Dungeons and Dragons, yeah, so, man. I'm surprised you haven't. You're at, like, the age to where, like, it was super popular when you were, like, primed for it.
The thing is, not that I didn't know anybody that... that was one reason. I didn't really know a lot of people...
Yeah, it was hard to get the entry, right?
That were into it. It's just that was one factor. Even though I lived at that time, that age group in the early 80s and mid 80s,
right.
where, not to mention, I was suburban New York, Long Island.
Yeah, did you get caught in a satanic panic too?
No.
Dude, I was in Kentucky. Everybody thought I was warned. Like, let me tell you something. Playing D&D, if I could have summoned demons and thrown fireballs, my 90s would have been way better than what it actually was. I'm just saying.
But the thing is, You think in that type of environment that you'd have more kids or young adults
sure.
within that age group to start out with that, doing that, but there wasn't. I'm an 80s child, born in the 70s early, but grew up mainly in the 80s.
Yeah.
But I could see stuff on TV that, yeah, commercials lie to us, it's kids anyway, but still, you know, this is going to be the big thing, and none of my friends really had it. yet they had, I've had friends who had every Transformer, every maid, every every maid.
Just never caught in your area. So.
But, you know, me trying to get, you know, at least one Transformer was like pulling teeth out of my parents. But it's no surprise to a lot of people. I grew up in a kind of somewhat restrictive household. And
sure.
So it, even if I tried to get into D&D, it probably wouldn't have been able to.
My start in it, like, I had access to the books through, like, I grew up in very impoverished eastern Kentucky. Like, everybody can probably hear the accent and everything. So, like, well, one of the side effects was that was, you know, to help out, people donated stuff to our library by the bajillions, you know, like, oh, poor kids, we won't give them food or anything, but here's a cool book. So in the library, we actually had the D&D books, and, like, I would look through them, and I mean, like, dude, as a fantasy kid, like, I grew up with Conan and Beastmaster and...
same here, and I remember watching the Dungeons & Dragons cartoon in the 80s.
Dude, that little unicorn that go, bleh, I love it.
I have the DVD set, which comes with a little D&D book, too.
It does, it comes with the character sheets, man, that's awesome.
But, again, it's like, if I tried to start up something, it's like, nah, we don't want to do it. Like, oh, I want to learn. Come on, Jesus Christ.
Well, see, that's the thing. Like, I think podcasting, so the thing that we're doing at the moment, like, that helped a lot. Like, Critical Role, you've probably heard of that, if not anything else.
Again, rings the bell.
It's part of the, like, common, like, just out in the ether now. And then, like, Stranger Things, you had the D&D game as part of season one. I'm going to spoil season three for you, by the way, right now, with some deep knowledge.
Go ahead.
All right. So the second season had me really excited because one of my favorite monsters in Dungeons & Dragons is called the Mind Flayer. And that's what they called the sentient shadow thing.
Right.
All right. So who did the Mind Flayer attack?
It attacked Will, mostly.
Yeah, and what's Will? The smallest kid, the weakest kid, some little punk ass, right?
Right.
Like, why did the Mind Flayer choose him? Easy target, right? In D&D, there's an upgraded Mind Flayer. So how Mind Flayers are made, they're these little seed things, very similar to what Stranger Things did. They go into a body and they consume it and become like this big squid-faced creature, you know? There are versions that attack liches and wizards and like stronger characters, and they become Alhoons. That Mind Flayer is going to go after 11. When he takes over her body and gets all the telekinesis and all that craziness, oh, dude, it's going to be awesome.
So,
D&D's already done
it. If you guys haven't seen Stranger Things yet,
go back a couple episodes. You know, he covers it really good.
One, you're missing out. Two, who the hell are you and why are you listening to the show? No. there's still, you know, go back, pause the show, watch. It's binge season two, it's binge season one, and then come back and listen.
Make a day of it.
Make a day of it. Still a lot of people are bitching about episode 7.
What do people have against that? I love
because,
it.
Because, like I said, it's a backdoor pilot. That's all it is.
I agree, and I hope it's true. Because one of my
that's what it feels like. It's a backdoor pilot.
Like, my favorite 80s movies are the ones, like, it kind of reminded me of, remember Adventures in Babysitting?
Yeah.
And it kind of reminded me of, what's the one where the gang is trying to go from one side of New York to the other?
Warriors.
Dude, it had that feel to it. Like, sure, it was a little cheesy version thereof.
Right.
But that's okay. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it
a lot. One of the things I didn't put on the show page or mention it, I'll mention it here today, it says I was going through my Vudu account.
Uh-huh.
And what tends to happen with my Vudu account, I buy my own stuff, but I have friends that, like, I don't want a Vudu code. Here's a Vudu code.
Of course.
And I was going through my what I have in my Vudu, and I'm like, I don't have any cues, and I'm that type of person. I don't have any cues, and I'm searching, you know, cues on Vudu, what to buy, and what comes across as I'm going through the plethora of cues that are up there. And
I can only think
of
Queen of the Damned. But,
like, you have Queen of the usual, like Queen of the Damned, which is an okay film.
Maybe Queen Mary, one of the old 70s movies.
Stuff like
yeah.
that. And what comes up is Q, the Winged Beast. Now this
I've heard of this. I've never watched it. Is it great?
Other than a few months ago, the last time I watched this movie, I was like 10 years old.
Uh-huh.
It was on like HBO or something like
sure.
that. And I'm thinking, now the little 10-year-old me is like, this movie was awesome. And I'm like, oh my God, this is the cheesiest movie ever. I could see why I loved it. I still love it. It has that Roger Corman feel to
it.
Oh,
great. Yeah. And I'm already sold.
It's that type of deal. And it takes... I mean, it has David Carradine. It has...
So, you're doing nothing but pitching this movie so hard.
The same guy that did this, I think, did The Stuff.
Okay, I do remember that, yeah.
Yeah, and the same...
Very 80s,
Same type of character, person who played in The Stuff is in Q. So it's the same type of cheesy special effects and about this large pterodactyl-type beast, you know, that was once a, you know, Mayan god or something like that. I mean, it's that 80s cheesy film. I'm like, oh my God, I want to buy this for $10. I didn't. It was just like, is it really
worth it? That's probably on YouTube, right?
Yeah, it is. That's where I watched it. Like, I found the full version on YouTube for free. I'm like, thank you, Uncle Tony. I was like, I have to see if this is actually worth my $10. I'm like... You know, since I'll probably, next time I'll watch this in another 10, 20 years, you know, 30 years, you know,
look, if the license owner really cared, it'd be off YouTube.
Right. But it's on YouTube, check it out. And for the cheese factor alone, it's...
But yeah, I love all this. Like, it seems like everybody's, like, having the resurgence of D&D. So I'm really unfortunate. Like, have you looked around? Like, you go to your hobby place sometimes too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we played there before. Got to get you into a game, man. You got to play. I think you'd really enjoy it.
Have you been a dungeon master
before? I am a dungeon master, yeah. I'm a storyteller. Like I said, I've done wrestling and like comedy. And I wasn't actually a dungeon master until 5th edition. The latest edition of Dungeons & Dragons came out. I didn't like 3rd and 4th edition. It was like they had really dumb rules for things. Like there was roles for like... reaching into your pouch and whatnot, and like I understand the simulation effect of it all. Like, you know, if I'm fighting a goblin and I reach into a pouch, yeah, sure, the goblin should be able to stab me because I'm doing something stupid. But you know, like when we play Dungeons and Dragons, I want it to be more like the Saturday morning cartoon or more like Conan, where you're not going to get hurt that bad. You know, you're the hero,
right?
Sort of thing.
That's what I heard when the current generation of books came out. It was from friends online saying, yeah, it's more easier. It was geared towards newer fans.
Well, I was a second edition kid, so, you know, that was 80s and late 80s, early 90s. You know, that was about the time I was hitting 10 to 13-year-old when, like, D&D's just the best thing ever. And then I got out of it because it was hard to play, and also I did have the Satanic Panic thing going on where I was at. So, like, instead of playing Dungeons & Dragons, we weren't allowed to play that because there was a... I can't believe I forget his name. Forrest Gump.
Oh, yeah. Tom Hanks?
Yeah, Tom Hanks' movie just made sure that like Dungeons & Dragons was forever seen. Mazes and Monsters is what it's called. Great movie. Go watch it if you haven't. But it made D&D evil. So, like, the next game we picked up was Shadowrun, which is another role-playing game. It's not really that much different, but I used guns instead of fireballs, and everybody around us was happy about that. Like, sure, you can kill people with guns all you want, you just can't use magic. So...
I'm sure you heard the story about, I know it was going around Facebook for a while, there was a story out in reference to D&D.
Mm-hmm.
It was, granted, there's a lot of positive press in reference to,
sure,
especially with Stranger Things. It was one of those positive stories about D&D. It was about someone who was autistic,
mm-hmm,
and D&D kind of helped. I'm not sure the perspective of the story. It was either from the father or from the person, saying that D&D helped this artistic person,
mm-hmm,
learn patience and come to deal with patience.
Of course.
And, you know,
well, a lot of the players I actually play with now are autistic. Like, somewhere on the scale.
We're not dissing anybody.
I'm autistic, not. So. I'm not saying that. Like, what I'm saying is, it's. I can see where autistic people can gain a lot of benefit from playing D&D, and I love them for it. Because, like, dude, like people who are like not on the spectrum. Like, they're checking their phones and stuff. Like, they'll play, but they also disconnect a little bit. But, man, like, my players who, like, focus as, you know, part of,
right,
like... I don't even want to call it a problem. Like, everybody that I've met who's been autistic so far just see things a little differently. And I like that. Like, that's my favorite thing about, like, working with people. Just everybody, like... That's another thing I like about Dungeons & Dragons. Now, not to pull too far off the topic, but, like, dude, anybody can play now. Like, it's really fun. Like, we got more women playing. we're not in the most minority diverse part of the country, but, you know, like, right. I think it's really fun that, like, dude, you seeing some, like, guys play D&D, those are your freaks and geeks. Like, if you're different, you're probably going to be pulled to the table, and I love it.
What kind of dungeon master are you? The kind of the nice guy, or what part of the spectrum are you?
I get blamed. It depends on how the day's going. But what I like is, since I come from a pro wrestling background,
right.
I like making the bad guys clearly the bad guys and the good guys clearly the good guys. And the main event's going to happen eventually. There's going to be some build up for it. So I'm really kind to my players. I like a lot of giving them the magic items. If you come to me and you're like, there's some races in D&D now, like there's Ninja Turtles. They're called Turtles, but they're basically the Ninja Turtles. You're a giant humanoid turtle. If you came to me and said, like, pretty much want to be Michelangelo, I want to use nunchucks, and I want to kick people and say cowabunga, we'll make it work.
Well, what I mean is that I've known people who were dungeon masters at one point, and it's like they'll randomly put a chest just to see if, you know, that type of, you know.
Dude, I'm so bad with red herrings.
It's not so much a red herring, it's like, there's a chest in front of you. Do you want to open it? Oh, no, but there's a chest. You got to open it.
Yeah, you got to do that. You got to show your hand sometimes. And, like, sometimes my players catch on to it. Sometimes there'd be something really good, and I make it sound ominous, and they just move along.
Like, the whole aspect is like, I want to make sure the people I'm playing with call me a dick today.
Well, you try not to give – there's this funny game term called 10-foot pole syndrome. Have you ever heard of this?
Probably the 10-foot pole aspect, but not
– Well, the syndrome is you put so many traps and, like, just minute dangers in the way that every character buys the 10-foot pole because it's one of the items on the item list. It's, like, kind of absurd when you first play D&D. Like, I can buy a 10-foot pole. What's a 10-foot pole good for? And now every time they move a foot – in a dungeon, they're smacking every stick or rock or keyhole with the 10-foot pole to make sure there's no traps. So you don't want too paranoid because it slows things down.
I tend to do, when I did a lot of my Halo Reach maps, I was the asshole.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Rev built a map. Oh, shit.
So
where is the asshole of it? Where did he become the asshole? I'm not being an asshole. Bullshit.
So you hit all the rocket launchers in the places where you knew how to get to, but nobody else?
No, I pulled when people came to my house, it's like, this map is based on Skyrim. You don't play Skyrim, but if you see it, there's a way to get to it. You just got to figure out how to do it.
Right.
And the only people that would know how to get to those things were people that helped me build that map.
Of course.
And so if someone else who didn't know how to build that map or, you know, knew my maps, I'm across the map with a sniper rifle. They're going, this is an awesome pink, gotcha, dick. Or I'll put, like, transporters to different aspects way off the map in the center of a kill ball.
Yeah, I've played on your maps before. I didn't have so much fun as you did.
You have?
No, it was like, very similar aspects I have ran across.
But they're fun. There are aspects of there's enough to do, meaning that I could easily duck and cover in a spot that I created. And,
of course.
You know, there's a lot. And, but
yeah, whenever I did any kind of map making, I think my old school D&D always came into me. I always liked having a gimmick, but I also liked to be almost too fair. Like, my favorite multiplayer map of all time is did you play Unreal Tournament back in the day?
I tried to get into it. I played Unreal, but not...
Remember Facing Worlds? Yeah. It's just the two towers and a big field in between?
I think so.
Dude, that's like the simplest map of all time. That's generally what I built. Like, big open field, just shoot me if you can. I'm going to hop like a bunny and hope for the best.
And that's what... that's why I loved Halo Reach.
Because I did too.
The match... the Forge World was awesome in that.
Well, see, that's what I'm shocked that you haven't played D&D. That's part of the fun of Dungeons & Dragons, making dungeons and making people very paranoid. That's what
like I said, when I built the map, I was like, okay, where's it? All right. They look up, like, I'm sure it. A lot of the people that I play with would see stuff around, like, I know I can get up there. Is there a way to get up there? Yes, there is. You got to figure out where it is. But I'm playing fair today. And I'd have this small little map.
Sure.
If you played Reach, it's right above that hangar.
Right.
And that's the perfect small map to build on.
Nice.
and I called it Caboose after after Red and Red versus Blue, the Caboose. It was simple, stupid, and you know, for 4-on-4 or 6-on-6, that's perfect. And it's just this crazy little maze of a map, and just
I wish I had played more like that. Every time I played Halo, old school or new school, I always liked the vehicle maps. You know, like, give me a ghost. I always feel good flying around.
Yeah, a buddy of mine, I miss playing with him. His username was Solen Grin. He changed it from... his initial was Silly-Ass Mofo. Because he wanted people, once he shot him and killed him on Halo, and if someone asked, you know, who killed you? Oh, some silly ass mofo. But he wasn't allowed to play as that gamer tag anymore. So all my maps with him attached to it can't be posted.
I'm going to have a confession here. I actually used to work for Xbox tech support, and that was always the dumbest thing that I had to do, was go through and like look for obscene usernames and offer a credit to change it. It sucks.
It wasn't really offensive. Just that
it wasn't. I feel like that one's fine.
So he switched to Solen Grin, and a lot of the maps that he... When he switched to Solen Grin, it's a map that I'm able to share. He called it Plinko. He made this huge ass map that kind of like the Plinko from Price is Right.
I remember
with ATVs and
that's real funny.
A tower in the center that you could just try to pick off your partner, plinking down. It's just one of these like. What are you guys making? A map just for shits and giggles. That's it.
I like it. Like when plasma grenades and a warthog goes like tumbling down.
Right, something like that. Fun. You have a grenade launcher trying to blow up a guy. It's just shits and giggles maps. It took us a year when he was on plane, doing it nightly up until like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, both of us building maps.
Sure.
It took us a year to figure out the spawn points.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You know, because there was a knack that either... When you tried different game types, the spawn points had to be set to that game type. And we didn't know that. Once we found that out, all right, you build the map.
I don't know. I'll do
the spawn. It was just like, I figured out how to do the spawn points. So it was like, all right, you build it. I'll add spawn points. And that's how we figured out everything else. And having two people on that map building it, you were able to... level everything.
Oh yeah, man, I thought that was really fun. Like, I really liked what online stuff was coming around so that you could collaborate and get things done faster. Like, you see what the kids make in Minecraft nowadays?
Yes. I've seen pictures.
I've never played either.
And the thing is, I don't like Halo 5's Forge.
I went PS4. I never got the chance to play the new ones.
I have a lot of friends who have PS4s. A lot of them are streaming like son of a bitch. And here I am sitting with an Xbox One.
oh, poor you. That's still a good system.
I'm starting to stream with it, guys, folks. I'm starting to, it's got its own built-in streaming service. It's a Twitch equivalent. So I'm able to stream that way. And
I finally partnered with Twitch.
I'm on
on the biggest accidental thing ever.
What?
I got banned from Twitch doing role-playing games. So, like, I had my thing set up, and we were playing Shadowrun, one of the games I told you about I used to play.
Yeah.
I was playing with a new group, and our fantasy racial slurs got screened. And apparently it's offensive to call a dwarf a mud puddle. So we actually got flagged for that, and all my videos got took down. And then they partnered me after that. I was like, Twitch, you're weird.
So I've been trying. You know, I just recently got a. I know you saw the post the other day. For the longest time I've had Frontier, internet, and it was okay. But for me to when I had my 360, still do.
Sure.
When I downloaded a game, it was easy for me to start the download before work, go to work, come back, and it's done.
Of course,
because it took 8 hours for a simple game like Halo to download.
I know.
8 hours on Frontier. So doing it while I went to work was perfect. Or when I went to bed, by the time I woke up the next day, it's downloaded.
Yeah, I do. I'm not downloading overnight.
And now, but with the larger games, with digital and Xbox and PS3, you have games that are 44 gigs easy. On Frontier, it was taking me 3 days to download. 2-3 days.
Well, yeah.
And that's nonstop without the console going, we're tired, we're turning off right now. And I'm, like, sick and tired of this. And not to mention, Frontier constantly buffering my videos and, you know, lagging out.
Yeah, I've always accused them of bottlenecking me because you're like me, a high-end consumer of data. You know, you give me a gig, I want a gig. You know, I'm going to use it.
And it wasn't that, just that they were, like you said, bottlenecking me for some ungodly reason. And here I am only doing, at that time, playing Halo, getting games and so forth and so on. Now, the past 2 years, it's even more so because I do this. And so, yesterday, I went up to Xfinity. I'm like, listen, I want your phone and, you know, high speed. And they said, do you want to bump it up to, instead of it being 25, do you want it to be the 200 limit? I'm like, all right, how much is that? Oh, it's going to be an extra $10. Okay, let's do that. How much is the baseline? $40. Okay, let's, you know, bump it up to 50, you know?
Of course.
What's the total package going to run me? $80? That's $20 cheaper than Frontier. Let's do it. So, I did the test yesterday, and I downloaded, because I picked up cheaply, it's basically Gears of War, first Gears of War.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 44 gigs. Took me about an hour and a half to download.
Sure.
I'm like,
wow.
Holy shit, I'm missing out. And
yeah, not to put Comcast over because they've done me no favors in the past, but our business just switched from Xfinity to Comcast, and I couldn't be more happy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, dude, like, I work with a lot of large, you know, image files and stuff, sending them back and forth. Like, it's been a world of difference.
Granted, what I have, I went up, it's the Xfinity right up the road, but still, it's still faster than what I had.
Exactly.
And I tried out Overwatch last night, rented it from the library.
Nice.
Not a fan of it.
Me either.
I wanted to try it. It took maybe about a half hour before it was fully downloaded.
Well, I played like 7 years of Team Fortress 2, you know, like, just because it was always a thing on Steam. And it just wasn't different enough for me to justify, like, I'm going to pay $80 for this.
It's just like when I went into the library, because as much as y'all out there in listening land know I have problems with the library, but still they have Xbox One games
mm-hmm.
to rent for free. And it gives me a chance to try before I buy.
Sure.
And they had Overwatch. I was going to pick up Battlefront,
sure.
the first one,
mm-hmm.
and go back and play that for a little while because I kind of liked it. But they had Overwatch, and I've been hearing the rantings and ravings and how good Overwatch is. And I was like, I got to try it. I got high-speed internet. Might as well, it'll take me about whatever, maybe an hour to download, half hour.
Sure.
Give it a try. If I don't like it, I can always return it the next day.
Yeah.
And, you know, I streamed for a little while. I'm like, you know what? This is not, you know, I'm a noob and everybody's at level 50.
I know, man.
And it's like, no, this is not like Call of Duty that I could just easily.
Well, see, I'm going to swing this back around to D&D on you.
Go ahead.
Leveling up. Every game has stolen stuff from D&D. And I hate it because, like, man, Battlefield and Call of Duty, those games, like, I don't think we should have levels in a shooting game. If I aim at your head and pull the trigger, you should die.
Oh, that's number one main. Like, I hit this guy in the head 5 times. You should be down.
Basically, we're making fun of you, Destiny 2.
Oh, yeah.
But, of course, it is set in the future, and people have high-tech armor. Whatever. If I shoot you in the head with a shotgun, you should die.
Like, right. We're looking mainly at Call of Duty and Battlefront.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But or Battlefield, sorry.
Either
same,
one.
Same difference.
Well, I'm in on the Battlefield, what's the Star Wars one?
Battlefront, yeah.
Yeah, two, like, man, did you see how much it's going to cost and how much time you had to spend to unlock everything?
I just saw it last night.
Yeah.
I follow Phil DeFranco, and he posted up a retweet saying that who's doing Battlefront?
EA.
Mm-hmm. EA's taking down the marketplace, period, for it.
So they should just, like, I had the original one. EA made it also. Like, that was like Xbox One, like the very first Xbox days, not Xbox One.
I had the PS2 version of Battlefront. I mean,
I loved it.
And Battlefront 2, and both were awesome.
And then now, like, I got to play for 4,000 hours to kill somebody as Yoda. Like, come on, guys. Don't do that to me. Like,
right.
I ain't got that kind of time anymore. Ugh. But yeah. Forget those guys. I'm buying Pokemon.
I don't have Pokemon on my phone all the time.
Well, I'm buying the two new games. I fell in for it. I don't even get time to beat those anymore, but I buy them every time. That's what I do.
I was in the 10th. It's amazing how my progression went since the early days of me growing up. Yes, I started out with an Atari 2600, moved to, we actually used our imagination when we played Atari games, moved on up to a Nintendo NES, and moved.
Did you get to hit up the Intellivision at any point?
No.
I had one of those. Those are silly.
I've known people with it, and I might have fiddled with it, but I haven't, it's the same type of, almost the same type of graphics, maybe a hair better.
It was an Atari. It was mostly the Atari games. Right. You know, you had your rough Pac-Man that never turned to the left or right. You know, he's just always about in one direction.
Right. And the, like I said, moved to NES.
Sure.
For the longest time, and never went to, beyond, I went to the Super Nintendo, but never passed that generation. Because I went from the Super Nintendo for the longest time because of lack of funds, and all of a sudden, Sony PlayStation.
Right.
And I went from, for the longest while, I was a Sony PlayStation hater.
Oh.
And then all of a sudden, Final Fantasy came to Sony instead of Nintendo. And I was like, there has to be something about the Sony game, you know, Sony platform. And I went from there.
Yeah, I don't think I got one right away either. I think I came in about the time 7 and Metal Gear Solid were like, I guess that was a couple of
To me, it was like when Final Fantasy 7 came out, which never really worked out right for me. Because I'll say this to this day, that when I had that, I think it was the version that I had, because unlike today, the updates happen weekly, monthly, whatever. The version I had about midway, not even midway through disc 2, the game would quit. It would
crash. I had a bug.
It wouldn't really crash, it's just that my save game would be corrupted somehow. And I couldn't get any further. So, which sucks.
Look here, kids. We're the ones that had to deal with that stuff. You guys with your stupid cloud saves and bullshit.
Right. And constant updating. But from there, from Sony PS1, I went to the PS2.
Yeah.
Which had a lot of great games and so forth and so on.
Oh, dude. I was such a nerd. Like, I was super broke, but I was the dumbass who had the Sega CD and the Dreamcast and the... I enjoyed Dreamcast, actually. Dreamcast was sweet. But
my first online multiplayer was with the PS2. When I first... when I lived
Fantasy in, Star Online? Or?
No, it was oddly Metal Gear Solid Rising Sun.
Right.
That's... Now, folks out there, and you youngsters out there, with us, back in the early part of this century, the exclusivity was either... If you bought, let's say, a game like Call of Duty... Back in those days of the original Xbox and the PS2 days, the exclusivity was online multiplayer sometimes. Meaning, if you were on Sony, sometimes you'd get the online multiplayer, while Xbox did not.
Yeah, and then Xbox kind of won that fight when they came out with Live, though. Yeah. That was actually really fun. Because I remember playing, but the first Battlefield for Star Wars wasn't multiplayer online.
Right.
But the second one was, right? Like, was that
like that, I think so.
Yeah, because I remember it and Halo 2 came out about the same time. And like, Halo 2 playing online, dude, like, that blew my mind. I was.
Yeah. And that's was my first experience with high speed internet through, at that time, Comcast. And at that time, again, we had Verizon in that area. Verizon wasn't in Inwood at that time, and yet they were saying, we're in Inwood. I'm like, no, we're not. And all of a sudden, Comcast said, well, here's the thing. Comcast was the one that explained it. We're in the area, but we're not in the area. I'm like, what do you mean by that? Well, right now we're in Martinsburg, but the chance being Inwood is slim. We'll turn it on, just come back. If it doesn't work, fine. Turn it on, poked up the modem, worked. I'm like, okay. Nice. Plugged in my PS2, and I was playing Rising Sun. I loved the multiplayer more than I loved the main game.
Exactly.
And I loved it. You know, mm-hmm. I was there playing. That's why I'm excited about. I want to pick up for $40 at Walmart this Black Friday Call of Duty World War II.
Right.
Because I loved the Rising Sun, and that was the first, you know, just going around.
Yeah, I remember Rising Sun, man. That was actually, like, I think it was, like, the first real video game, like, set in the Asian theater for World War II. Like, before then, it was always us killing Germans.
That's why I got a lot of my multiplayer training. It's like, the guy was a... let me put it like this, folks. The word I'm about to use is in regards to a family, a group, like how we here at the show use Mafia. The word in most online circles is clan, which means it's a group of friends There's no racism or anything like that involved.
Blood X Clan.
just that this person was a member of a gaming clan. Let me put it like that. That way it's to distinguish something that is of racist implications. He was a gaming clan. He's the one that kind of instructed me, play on the maps you don't like. That way you could go into a map, start bitching that you hate this map, and then all of a sudden dominate. And
that's the Counter-Strike rule, too. You get to learn how to play in the bad maps before you can play on the good maps.
Right. That way you could still be good in the good maps that you love,
but
still dominate in the bad maps.
Or try to.
Or at least, yeah.
Yeah, I think I should always name myself on online victim of a headshot, because it's just kind of what happens to me all the time.
Well, my buddy is like that. It's like, hi, I'm going to be your target today.
That's great. That's fun.
One of the things I hated, we brought up Destiny to you briefly. It's like, mm-hmm. I picked up Destiny, as much as I hated Destiny, first one.
I liked your review.
It was
colorful.
As much as I hated the first one, it was like, all my friends were like, we're all getting Destiny 2, we'll all be able to play again today. And
everybody quit after 3 weeks.
And it's like, nobody's playing it. It's like, you guys wanted me to play Destiny 2, I pre-ordered the son of a bitch. I'm playing it, but where are you motherfuckers? You know? But...
All right. Well, since you're getting confrontational, Godfather, I got something I gotta bring up with you. I'm going to give you a gift. I'm going to give you a
D20.
Made out of metal.
Ooh.
Isn't that great?
This is awesome. Beats the plastic one I have in the house.
But I'm going to do that so that I can buffer my attack on you.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
For calling out bronies the last episode. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I have just presented to the Godfather the Tales of Equestria, the storyteller role-playing game.
Uh-oh.
Look at this. How can you not love all of this? We can play D&D as the ponies. There's stats and everything. You had to just trash talk me real hardcore for an hour the last episode. What? Wow. He was like, oh man, I love the banner, but everybody who's bronies just go around headbutting kids and stuff. No, that's not what happens. But I must admit, I've never been to a Brody Con. I bought this at my local favorite gaming shop.
Yeah? I don't mind being trolled on the show. it's like, it's a first, but I know good chance Big Ken is going to be listening to this, he's going to be rolling his ass off. So I don't mind being trolled on my own damn show. Shows you what kind of a sport I am.
See, look at this. Look, he's all like, bro, look, tell me you wouldn't want to play this. Like, we got maps. Look, there's her laboratory and all the items that you can find. I figured you'd get a kick out of it.
The thing is, this was on our crossover with Scott.
Yeah.
Oh man. And the thing is, I'm going to be speaking to him as of this recording. I'll be speaking tonight. I'm going to yell at him tonight. Like, I'm going to be on the phone through Skype with him. And it's like, because he's crossed over with me, and I'm going to cross over with him. It's like,
I will listen. That was actually a really cool interview with the guy.
It's going to be on his posting. I don't know when he'll be posting it. So it's like, when I speak to him pre-show, it's like, you don't believe what happened. Trash talked a fucking brony. In my current recording, my guest brings me a brony book. A D&D brony book. But oh, dear God. I gotta love it. You know, it's just, this is going to be one of the... So we gotta have fun on the show. You gotta have fun.
You do, right?
You gotta have fun. Metal D&D and a brony rope D&D book. What are the odds?
Look, what I'm gonna do is you're gonna have the book and you're gonna read it. And our first role playing session that we should record will be set in Equestria. I love Big Candy there too. I think he would enjoy being. Dude, I already know what his cutie mark's gonna be. Just a big Hershey kiss.
Cootie mark?
Cutie mark. You know what
cutie mark. Cutie mark.
Yeah.
Shows you how much of a brony I am.
Look, this book will explain all of it to you. There's actually a whole chapter on what cutie marks can do for you. There you go, bud.
Oh, dear God. This is going to be... This could, if we actually record this, it could be extremely epic, or it's going to be a fail.
It's really hard to find dungeon masters nowadays. I am willing to run the game for the amusement of all.
Yeah, for it, depending, I will, if this happens, I will set up, I will record it. It could be in either an epic, something totally epic, or an epic fail. One of the two. It might be awesome either way you want to turn it.
I will make sure somebody laughs, because that's my goal.
And I'll probably clickbait it too, like, you won't believe what we're doing.
I feel like that needs to be video. It'd be really fun watching a bunch of I don't know Big Candy's age.
He's not as old as I am, but
you just got a nice bunch of approaching middle age white cisgendered males playing ponies. You know, that's money. I don't know what else.
And the thing is, to let you folks at home kind of know, I've seen a few reviews on it. I will be picking up a Vivitar. Pretty much a Vivitar cam is a it's a GoPro for people on a budget. So,
oh, I got a DSLR. We'll be 4K.
I'll put it up on YouTube. I got better high speed connection now.
Yeah, you got better than I do.
I should be doing more. I know Sasha challenged me to
dude, is there any chance that we could invite Sasha to play?
She's vehicle impaired like I am.
I will go drive people. I got a new RAV4. I'm more than willing to get a crew. We can play in the car. What's the late night guy that he does the car karaoke? We can do car pony role playing. That's not an adult role playing situation. This is a kid's game.
Oh my god! I wouldn't know what to say. every thought I'm going was like, oh wait a minute.
Burn the artist has made the Godfather speech, ladies and gentlemen.
No, it's not speechless, because everything I want to say will come out so wrong.
No, you got to say you want to role play with Sasha, Burn, and Candy as ponies.
Sasha, if you're... Oh, my God.
Please be listening. I think it'd be great.
Please be listening.
That's going to be an at tag for sure.
That would be somewhere along this week. It's going to be at tag. You won't believe you're always challenged the Princess of Darkness, too. ...
Actually, that's a stat in the game. She gets to be the actual moon Princess of Darkness.
Oh, I almost spit out my water on the pictures over here. Oh, dear God. Now, this is definitely being proven to be an interesting episode. what else can we get into? We're at about an hour and 22.
At an hour and 22, 8 more minutes. I'm going to say, I think we should definitely plan to do the role-playing game, man. I think it'll be a lot of fun. That's my goal, is basically I want everybody to play games.
You play games.
See, now you got to do a Facebook Live where you show people the pages and how awesome.
Man, I'll probably do this at the house.
Please.
Facebook Live. Oh,
well, wait and review it. I definitely want a Godfather review of the My Little Pony role-playing game.
I'm going to have to probably, after this will probably be a solo rant episode, because I have yet to see Justice League. I'll probably be sometime within the net, either tonight or...
Oh yeah, I've not got to see that yet either.
For those who haven't seen it yet, I'm going to spoil it for you guys right now. It's hobbits going to a mountain.
Pretty much.
With a ring.
I'm looking forward to it. I can't think of anything else. I thought Fantastic Beasts was coming out this year, and that's like a whole year away.
I thought there was one coming out this
year.
No,
it's going to be next year. They just did a whole spoiler thing on it. Like, it's going to be holiday season next year, 2018. But I've been hitting ahead enough to where I thought this year was 2018 for the majority of it. So
I thought it was supposed to come out this year.
It might have been.
It's. I think they were too worried about Star Wars.
Oh, yeah.
And that's one of the things I think a lot of studios are going, because it's going to be a main Star Wars story, like right now it's Last Jedi, and next year is going to be like a Han Solo. So they want to put it next to a quote-unquote weaker Star Wars story. than a stronger one because they don't want to get lost in the shuffle.
Sure.
But I want to see. I would rather see a movie like Avatar 2, Fantastic Beasts, go up against a juggernaut like Star Wars.
Well, I'm one of those people who aren't excited about the Han Solo. So, like, I'm done with prequels. Like, for anything. I'm not super excited about it. I wished I was, because, like, you know, I'm a Han Solo, like, dude in the 80s. I wanted a leather jacket so bad just because of Han Solo. But, I don't know. Like, and all the cast and crew look great. I just, I don't know what the story would be. Like,
right. Maybe it's...
I'm going to watch it. Don't worry. They're going to get my money twice. Yeah.
They're going to get the money off.
Yeah. But, I mean, I was also kind of... I was one of the skeptics for Rogue One, but I loved it. Like, I just absolutely loved it.
I love... there's quite a few reaction videos about... it's just... They don't really have Star Wars playing in the screen.
Sure.
But it's the person... They're just filming the... You know, this person's watching Star... They've seen the Star Wars before. They haven't seen Rogue One.
Sure.
And it's them watching, you know, their girlfriend watching the ending of Rogue One.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh my God. You know, just the funny react, not like a Jinx or a...
of course.
Like a Fine Brothers type of ordeal. It's just them watching the movie and it's that last little clip of what happens.
Dude, that last 30 minutes, I was like... That was as hard as the first 10 minutes of Up to watch. Like, I was bawling. I was like, don't kill everybody. You know everybody's going to die. Right. I know everybody's going to die. But, man, it was rough.
And it's just that whole aspect of you knew kind of Vader was a badass. And here is Vader being a badass upon a badass. And like, oh, fuck.
So you know, like the Han Solo movie, like I said, I could poo-poo on it.
Maybe it'll be the actual telling of how him and Chewie kind of meet, and that, which will be kind of cool.
Well, I'm also glad that Disney's going back and, like, you probably remember, I've been a big Star Wars. I played the role-playing game for it for years and years. Going back and, like, giving us what's the expanded universe that we lost, you know. So, like, that'd be fine. I think that's part of what they're doing is just building up, like, this is Disney's Star Wars. Sorry for everybody who liked the Del Rey books.
That's what I kind of liked about how Disney's approach. You know, aspect of with the Star Wars expanded universe. It for fans like myself who wanted to get into it, it was very confusing of where to start because you have a lot of fans going, start with this series, start with this series, start with this series, start at the beginning, start at, you know. But the aspect of Disney taking over and them saying, okay, we're removing that extended universe and making it legendary for the fans who love that line and want to continue reading, that's fine. But for the new fans, we're starting fresh.
And I'm glad they did. Because, the expanded universe, I mean, there was 30 years of... there were 70 books released a year and there's only 52 weeks in a year, you know? Like, it was just so hard to even, like... try to keep up with it.
You had this series.
And people would contradict one another and stuff, you know. I mean, like, I like that term that they used. I didn't know they called it the legendary series because, like, you know, that's what a legend is. It might not be completely true, but here it is. That's kind of cool.
I like how they're doing things now. There's a lot of speculation with what's going to happen with Last Jedi.
Oh,
I'm still stoked to see what's going to happen. They're getting...
Can we talk? Can we do some theory crafting here?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
How positive are you, or not positive, like, I'm on the internet way too often. I think Rey might be not a direct clone, but like a DNA vat-grown baby from Anakin.
I know there's the theory out there right now that, you play Battlefront 2, right?
Yes.
I haven't yet, but the theory that I've seen and heard is that it's possible the two main protagonists that are in Battlefront 2, the main storyline, that is Rey's parents, because they ended up in that little same planet she was found, in essence, found on, and they went...
She's on Naboo, right?
No, Rey was on that little desert planet.
Is that Naboo?
No. You're thinking Jakku.
Jakku, yes. Interesting. That would be fun. And I mean, coincide with the release and all that fun.
Because there was two different... That's one main theory, that because the two main protagonists in Battlefront 2 ended up on Jakku, then they kind of were pulled into the First Order.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, they kind of might have... The theory goes that she might have was put in custody of what's-his-name on the planet while they went to the First Order to do what they need to do there, or work, kind of connecting the dots, so to speak, and they were murdered or died, and she was left on the planet as a young child and lived there. Thus, some of the hints that you see in the new Star Wars movie, but it hasn't been confirmed. But in I think it was the little Disney character type of ordeal.
Yeah.
It came out that
Anakin called her cousin or something,
right,
like that. Yeah,
right. Not so much Anakin, but Ben.
Ben, yeah. Jobber, I don't know.
The whiny little bitch of a...
That little ugly dude. Yeah. No, I like him. Kylo Ren.
Kylo's Han's son, but...
Gotta have me a tablet with just like stuff that I don't know at hand at all.
And I'm sure you've heard that theory too.
I have.
Yeah. The theory that we speak of is that Kylo Ren didn't turn on the lightsaber that killed Han Solo. Han did it himself.
Yeah, like he's helping them deep infiltrate the First Order so Kylo can eventually be the good guy or whatnot.
Right. Since there's no... What a lot of people are going on is that maybe that's why they switched it or will switch it in The Last Jedi, that he kind of murders Leia, because even though the passing of Carrie Fisher earlier this year, it kind of, they could weave it that way too.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see what they do. And then you probably know more about this than I do. Is JJ coming back to do the third movie?
I think so.
Dude, that'd be great, because I love that first movie. It was great. I'm sure the second one's going to be great. I already got tickets pre-ordered.
I know it's like December 15th comes out. I'm going to be trying to get a ticket at the Regal Theater here, because right, the bus drops me up for Walmart. I'm going to spend all day over here anyway, so why
might
not?
Might as well, yeah.
That I won't say that's that, but it's the whole aspect of Star Wars. I know I've said it before. I don't know if I said it on air. Initially, for a lot of you fans who already know, George Lucas did not, past the first movie, he did not really have a plan for the Star Wars.
Yeah.
Then after the second and third one, I'm not talking the prequels, I'm talking Empire and Jedi. He came out in an interview and said, all right, this is what my plans are. I'm going to do the prequels, in essence, 1, 2, and 3. Then I'm going to do 7, 8, and 9. Then a few years after the prequels, he said, nope, I'm not going to do the 7, 8, and 9. So in essence, he said, from a fan standpoint, he told fans, go fuck yourself. And you had a lot of people, including Peter Jackson, said, I remember the stories that were coming out and said, you don't want to do it anymore. Peter Jackson saying, hey, Lord of the Rings, Lord of the Rings,
yeah,
hand it to me, you know, and which could have been at that time, you know, a great, I won't say a great run, he would have handled it decently, because you have to have some level of epicness to do Lord of the Rings, and what that stand, what they grossed. Over $1 billion?
You know, I don't know. I know that I had to buy the DVDs twice, because I'd buy the regular DVD and then they do the extended cut, and I'm that kind of person. Like, I'll buy them both, I guess.
I have the extended on DVD, even though I have the regular cut on digital.
Right.
But did you know about the little secret Easter egg in the extended cut?
Which one?
I'm not sure which. I think each one had an extended. It's kind of a little Easter egg on the DVD.
They used to do that all the time with DVDs, where you can like go around and find little extra videos hidden in the menu and stuff like that.
It was. I know, I think in one of the later chapters, you were able to find an Easter egg in reference to the Oscar speech that the person who played Gollum,
uh-huh,
It was either the MTV award or the Oscar speech that he gave, receiving for the best, I won't say animated character.
Sure.
And he was had the reward, and he had the digital mock-up of Gollum right next to him.
Oh, wow, that's fun.
And they're interacting, and Gollum's like, but Harry Potter's our friend, and, you know, going with Dobby's my friend. And they cut to Elijah Wood in the audience seeing this video, and he's like, they don't have the audio, but you can see what he's saying. He's like, this is fucking awesome. Because it's him, you know, the Gollum actually being both parts.
Oh, yeah. So, what's his name? Andy Sneakus or something like that?
He's one of those people that has done so much, but you don't really recognize him because...
Looking forward to him in Black Panther coming up, too. Like, we got like a lot of the Lord of the Rings characters showing up in it. Bilbo and Gollum. It's going to be fun.
And there's, what's his name who played, he was the Elf King.
Yep.
Yeah, you know who I'm talking about.
I know
who
you're talking about. I can't remember his name either. And oh, yeah. That guy's great. Elrond. What's his name? He was also Red Skull. He's why wouldn't you put him in every Marvel movie? He's great.
One of those people that, I'm sure you saw the shirt that he was wearing. Like, I was the Vendetta.
Well, yeah, he was, he was also, wasn't he one of the main guys in, no, he wasn't ever Voldemort, right, from Harry Potter or whatnot. But, I mean, that guy's also been a lot of guys that you don't recognize. That'd be great. It's fun.
So, we're at about an hour and 35, so you want
to... Yeah, I'm going to have to bow out, but I think it's been a lot of fun. Thanks for having me on.
It's great having you here, talking about D&D and a bunch of other stuff. And
yeah, it's kind of cool that, like... you know, you cover like a lot of geekdom that I don't really keep up with, like horror movies and stuff. Like, dude, I'm terrible with movies. Like, if it's bad in the first 5 minutes, I'm gonna go do something else. Like,
there's a difference between bad and bad. You know,
One of my favorite movies of all time is Ghoulies. So, you know, I can appreciate a bad movie done well.
There's a difference between bad and bad.
Like, exactly.
Bad as in, no, turn it off. Bad isn't, this is cheesy and it's going to be good. And there's bad, oh, this is a train wreck. I can't turn away.
Train wrecks I do enjoy. I love those. Like, I'm a big John Waters fan. So if you can hit that level of absurd early on, you catch me. You know, I'm good. If you're droning on about something I don't care about, I'm going to go do something else.
Right.
I don't have the attention span. But it's fun to hear you review, like, certain movies and stuff,
definitely.
Hopefully we broaden some nerd horizons here as well.
This was epic. I do thank you. I will be talking about this in the next episode.
You got to take some photos with your pink dye and the
pink,
my little pony.
The purplish. Look purple to me. So.
It is purple, I guess.
I'll be taking, as this thing encodes, I will be taking a picture and putting it up on the screen. Like, you won't believe it. I just got trolled by my guest. Oh, dear God.
Look, all I'm saying is all your guests should bring you gifts is what we're establishing here. So everybody should spend some money, give the Godfather some swag.
Swag.
And
I think that would be a hashtag too. This is awesome.
But yeah, man.
Which is the standard WWE chant. This is awesome.
But yeah, it's fun. It's fun chatting with you for the last 90 minutes or so, man.
Yep.
Anything comes up, anybody has any questions to me, follow me on Twitter. I'm at BurnTheComedian. That's like you're threatening to burn a comedian, as if you're trying to catch some guy on fire.
I'll do one better. I'll also include at least the link on in our show notes. That way it's a little bit easier so you guys know the proper spelling and, how it looks.
And I, if you follow me on Twitter, I'm unfiltered. I go from topic to topic to topic, but, you know, who isn't anymore?
Right. As I told Boogie last night, like, yeah, don't worry, you're going to get hate either way, so just post it.
Exactly. We're all big boys, we can take it. All right, man, I appreciate
Again,
it. Thank you
so much. And everybody else, thank you for listening. As always, as Bernie leaves, he gets his coat back on to do what he needs to do. You could always, if you have any questions, comments, or smart remarks, you could always email us at longcoatmafia@gmail.com. You can find all our episodes at our main site, which is thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com, which all those episodes go straight to the beginning, which includes our bad audio shows. You can also follow us on or subscribe to us on iTunes and Google Play Music. You could stalk us on Twitter and Instagram by looking up the handle Long Coat Mafia. And our Facebook page, once again, if you want to stalk us there, is facebook.com/TheLongCoatMafiaPodcast. And that is it. We are out.
See you next time on the Long Coat Mafia.